I do believe that the classical workplace is a crime scene. It's politicized, they lose their ideals, their values, and hopefully in places like this, that can be rationalized.
Yeah. We've lost that human touch in many companies. Yeah. I think we've almost unlearned how to speak to each other. People want to come, where you can meet someone and have an inspirational conversation, and it doesn't look like an office, because no one gets excited in the morning to go to the office.
I do genuinely believe that spaces like this can make a contribution. In fact, they're the only place to make a contribution. And I believe that people in community actually make themselves the best version of themselves.
I hope you walk in here tonight and meet someone that you didn't meet before and you had a conversation that sparked something. That is the magic that we want to create. I want to create a platform for every day, but that you create together. You are the core of what we do. It's not about Workshop 17, it's about you.
Great to be here for our fifth or fourth Workshop Wednesdays, if I remember. It's the first time we've had a dual act, Paul and Mark, obviously the founders of Workshop 17. We've had great speakers so far in the series, and it's great to be back here. And hence a great turnout. So thanks to all who've shown up. We normally have 100 RSVP and half come up, but we have filled the room nicely. So welcome everyone to be joining us. Today is a conversation about the journey of Workshop 17. Get to know Paul and Mark. It's not about me. Normally we have a slideshow. So looking forward to a nice conversation with the guys. I've met this team from Penny in Cape Town to Michelle to Clara to Takazi to the team on a journey from January when I joined as a member. And it's been through a member and now a partner that I really got to know the team. And I got to know the founders last. I got to know the founders literally today and 2 weeks ago. And yeah, I've learned so many things even today about their journey. So we're going to go through a bit of that story and kick it off. And, you know, if I could start with you, Paul, talk us through how and why, because the reason of starting. So maybe some of that narrative from this morning and kick us off as an
introduction. With pleasure. Yeah. I think Mark and I both have our own journey to start and how we connected in starting all what's where you are now. My accent gives me away. I'm Dutch. So that will be forever clear that there's an accent. So let me get it out of the way. I'm Dutch. Came to South Africa in about 2010. And before that, I always had my own business. And I had two businesses, one focused on learning and development and organizational change. And my passion and my background is in education. So all my life is about how can we help people grow, learn, become successful, and improve them, their knowledge and skills. As a consultant, you facilitate, you create learning programs. We had a company at that point in time, and I'm speaking 96, where we said we actually don't need an office. We need a place to meet because we're with clients. We're going to all the companies to consult to. But we need a place to meet where there shouldn't be fixed desk for everyone. And our consultants should work from home if they don't have to go to a client because they have families. We make long days. They should take their kids to school and we'll have lunch with them instead of driving to an office. So we had work from home allowances for our staff in 96. The time that faxes existed, I don't know about faxes, the things that the paper rolled out and you needed to copy them because they faded.
I should remind everyone in 96, I mean, everyone went to the office, right? I mean, that's pretty groundbreaking to even suggest to staff that they could work from home. I think in 96, before 2000, even 2020, if you were at home, you weren't working, right? So it was pretty innovative.
But we had this meeting place for ourselves. And then we saw clients started to come to us instead of us going to clients because they loved being at us. And we had a cafe, like an Italian-style looking cafe. We had a cappuccino machine, good coffee. And we were happy that clients were coming because that saved travel time for us. But they also then stayed after the meeting. Can I stay for a little bit of work? And then we figured out that work has changed, life has changed, but workspaces are still the same that they were. And we started in the Netherlands at that point in time. It was 2008, a first small co-working space. This was before WeWork existed. And the main thought I had is it needs to be a space that feels like a home, where people want to come, where you can meet someone and have an inspirational conversation. And it doesn't look like an office, because no one gets excited in the morning to go to the office. And that's a crime. Like, why are officers ugly? Why do they lack personality? There's no need for that.
Yeah.
So that space that I designed at that point in time, my only rule was there should be no office furniture coming in. It was more difficult than it's now, but this was then. And secondly, we should stop thinking of space in square meters, but in terms of access, in terms of use. So divide space in time and create access and basically a membership model instead of square meters. No one understood that at that point in time. I only half understood what I was doing. But that's where it started. And a big jump to 2010, coming to South Africa and being introduced to Jonathan Liepen in Maboneng. He introduced me to Mark, and he said, you two guys should speak.
Who knows Maboneng? I mean, Maboneng was the district in Joburg. I mean, as I heard today, I mean, unfortunately, if Maboneng had succeeded as a real working place, you'd still have a Workshop 17 there. But, you know, tell us a bit about the hopes and dreams of why there and why you started there.
If Maboneng had succeeded, maybe Johannesburg would be in a much better place.
We live in hope.
We live in hope, because I think the failure of Maboneng has actually translated into a lot of the problems we're seeing in the city today. Yeah. But for me, opening in Maboneng, funny enough, just to roll back a little bit, I wasn't dealing with fax machines in the 90s. But indeed, I started the first internet account or email account at a company.
Mark tells me he started Gmail, which I'm not sure about. It's not entirely untrue.
So, in the late 90s, I created a thing called Trust Email, which was email at your own domain, which was web-based, which in many ways is the precursor to Gmail.
Is you weren't using
fax machines. No, I was not. And in fact, in the late 90s...
What did you think on track? Can you tell?
Now, we did develop the first banking portal
okay. In
the late 90s. Yes. But okay, be that as it may.
Move on.
Maboneng, what excited me about Maboneng was a transitional space that both North and South could find a home. South being Soweto, North being Sandton. We were living in an era, it was just coming out of the apartheid sort of movement. And I thought this was something we could hook onto. You know, let's find a place where it didn't matter where you came from, you could actually find a happy place to be.
Yeah.
And to bring big companies and small companies together
and
let them, you know, figure out complex social problems, which will hopefully make the world a better place. And from my background, you know, my family very much entrenched in the liberation movement, I felt that this was something that I could hold on to.
Why did Maboneng work? What was the downfall of it? I mean, you eventually moved out of that space.
We came into Maboneng with the idea this becomes a new community, as Mark says, where everyone can come and find a home. It became much more of a touristy destination with lots of restaurants, but less geared to really full-time living and working.
Yeah.
And with that, there came more bars, more nightlife, less security, less parking. And that was killing for us in a sense. We had, in the beginning, we had the ex-com of Telkom to come in, sitting next to Maboneng entrepreneurs. If you can't come in securely and safely, then at some point it ends.
Yeah. Let's get forward to a building in the waterfront, the most valuable piece of real estate in the country, in South Africa, the V&A Waterfront. There's a building there that still stands. It was the Workshop 17.
Yeah.
Tell us about how you got going there as what is now still the original site that stands and is still a great space.
So at that point in time, we were called Open Collaborative City Workspaces. Mark and I put all our savings into that in Maboneng. So we went all in and we were sitting in Maboneng. And at some point, and Mark and I have a different recollection of it a little bit, but it basically comes down to we're invited by the V&A and by the GSB, which is the business school of the University of Cape Town. To help set up an innovation space at the waterfront. And that was being a Dutch guy doing something in Jeppe Town with Mark and Jim, to be invited to the waterfront, which is the most visited place in Africa. So the second one is the pyramids, but the waterfront gets 25 million visitors every year. And to be invited to set up that space there in what was called, it's now called the Watershed Building, but used to be Workshop number 17 when it was all working workshops in the past. And that's where Workshop 17 as name comes from, because the waterfront had that name. We as two guys from Jeppe didn't have the authority to dictate the name to the waterfront. So we went with Workshop 70.
Yeah, I mean, I love that. I didn't know that story exactly.
The reason why we were invited is because we had done, I think, quite a sterling job in Mabaneng.
Yeah.
Because we were delivering a very, very high-end product. You know, all the best equipment, the best acoustics. We really just went all out in a transitional neighborhood. So when David Green appeared, and before him, David Green being the CEO of the Waterfront, before him, Heinrich Wolf, the architect, it was like a no-brainer. Like, these guys almost deserve to be there. You know, to get into the Waterfront, a friend of mine had a retail store. I mean, you have to have applications just to get to, you know, 10 square meters. You know, we didn't have any applications. We were given 3,000 square meters. Because I guess this is the message to entrepreneurs. If you really believe in what you're doing, you'll be recognized. Because there was nobody doing that kind of stuff in the city.
So I want to talk about your approach to partnering a bit, and we're going to get there. I want to talk about the guy that decided to build his own CRM, which is you.
Okay.
In my line of work, I tell people not to do that, to actually pick a platform. But Mark, you've built a lot of tech for this business. But before we get there, let's jump ahead. So you built that business, and then you came back to Joburg to possibly a more logical site that was Sandton. So tell us about the move up to Sandton and obviously...
Interestingly enough, I think Paul and our vision wasn't to go from Mabaneng to Soweto. So we were going to go deeper south. But what happens when you meet capital?
Yes.
They bring you back north. So we landed up building in Sandton. And actually quite a pinch moment, because we built in the old Merrill Lynch Bank of America building. So 138 West Street was Bank of America Merrill Lynch. And for us, I think quite a wonderful thing to take over, you know, the bastion of capitalism and convert that into
and turn it into
a place where people, Joe Public, could literally come to. And one of the wow factors there is that you can walk off the street into a cafe with no security. Imagine. And to this day, that is the case. Like, one would think that is a crazy thing to do. Imagine. And indeed, you know, we've done it, and I think we've been, you know, heavily rewarded for it. And just a little bend on the tech side, we hosted the first first Amazon Loft event. Okay, so for those of you that follow Amazon and its genesis, Loft event is a big deal for them. They spent a month in 138 West.
Yeah.
And Werner Vogels, the CTO, just one underneath Jeff Bezos, was the keynote address. And that was just a real pinch moment for a techie to host. You know, it's arguably one of the most significant CTOs in the world. And just further on, AWS is many ways a little bit like what we do. So AWS provides processing power to big companies, so more small companies. You can be a tiny company and have all the power of AWS. Similarly, you can take a little membership from us and you can have all the power of a Workshop 17, meaning that you could meet a Werner Vogels.
Great.
And I think that was the big idea.
Yeah, it's great for startups and small businesses, and we find many of them in the community.
And you attended that event?
I did. I was there, absolutely.
And you didn't sign up for membership then?
No, I didn't.
It took you 8 years.
It took me a while.
Okay.
But along the way, WeWork propositioned you guys and nearly made a big deal. But of course, the big story for anyone that obviously everyone here remembers it, COVID struck.
So after the watershed, David Green introduced us to GrowthPoint, and GrowthPoint bought into the building and funded our growth. Because as I said, we put all our money in the first one, there was nothing left, and there's quite a few capital that goes into a space like this. So GrowthPoint, being the biggest commercial property owner in South Africa, thought, we need to see how this new model works and if it goes. And they started investing in us, and that's how we grew to more sites. Sandton, then Rosebank, Kloof Street in Cape Town. But then WeWork came into the country and they wanted to come to South Africa. And we thought, actually, that's great, because now the model that was unknown in South Africa gets much more publicity. So instead of being scared, we actually were grateful. Mm. We actually met them, they met us. And then before they wanted to go public at their first listing, they wanted to show that they had a real network in Africa, which at that point they had only two locations, and they wanted to buy us. So we were almost rich.
You're rich on the spreadsheet, as everyone has been at one point in their lives.
Rich. And actually, Mark and I joked, because we found it also ridiculous, the valuation, but we said, it can't be true, but let's let them buy it. And then we buy it back at a real value. That obviously didn't happen.
Yeah.
Their proposition crumbled and we were back on our own again. But then COVID hit and we provide space. And if you remember, between, there's 2 weeks for the first infection to come to South Africa, then lockdown was announced, and we had to close our doors. Now, that's quite something. So we were still young, so we didn't have lots of capital saved in the bank. And we said, what is the way to deal with this? And there was a few elements. One, we had lots of members and we had staff. We want to keep as many members and as many staff as possible. And we want to be standing ourselves at the end of COVID. So that was our principle, deal with all our members, saying, you know, we want to help you through, but also help us through. So if you can pay, please pay something. If you can't pay, we'll find a way for you. And then we went to our landlords, and that really changed our model. We learned from the hotel business, where I don't know if anyone is in hotels. Many hotels work on management agreements, where the owner of the building puts the funding in and you operate. Because we actually figured out we're not in property. We're actually in hospitality, and we're a service business. We don't own the building, so our capital capacity to own and leverage capital is very low. We own the fit-out, but the fit-out is not something you can really leverage. So we reverted to that model. We went actually to all the landlords and saying, well, if you want to keep us alive, we need to change the model to a management agreement. Otherwise, we need to default. So at that point in time, we were really between liquidation and reinventing ourselves. And we reinvented ourselves through a new model.
Yeah, we're going to get to that rebirth in the last few years where you've just gone into lots of sites. But Mark, I want to talk about the tech again. Did COVID change anything for you? Because a lot of businesses were forced to go online. Tell us about the tech journey.
I've always loved tech. I've built tech. My previous life was in tech. So it was natural for me to build the tech to run our business. But I'm not obsessed with building it if you can buy it. But you can't buy tech for a new industry. Like there was just no platforms available. So you got no choice but to build it. And I was fortunate enough to work with a guy called Jason Norwood-Young, who I've known for almost 30 years. And we first did bookings. And of course, you want to copy in tech, right? That's the first thing you do. So you go look at WeWork, what WeWork does. And we just ripped WeWork, you know, completely. And it started this idea of credits. So in other words, we move people from normal currency into our currency. And, you know, our walleting architecture was born. It was quite simple. But now it's very, very elaborate. And I think it's become quite a big differentiator. And it creates this friction-free experience. So I don't want to get too technical, but it's cascading wallets and quotas and all manner of things just to make the journey of our customers really, really easy. And micropayments and so forth. Then we've built into all other manners. I mean, the product is massive. It's got and of course, CRM, you know, again, there's a lot of CRMs out there, but they're overly complex, they bloatware, they're expensive. And actually, CRM is very, very simple. You need a lead, you need an opportunity, you put them on the track and you sell it.
So they say. And I know you've got big plans. It's been great to see where you're going with integrations and making it frictionless. For example, driving to Hyde Park, having the boom open, if you remember, right? Not just a bit member.
Yeah, yeah. So okay, that's admit integration.
Correct. Yeah, yeah. So we're sort of 20 minutes in. Anything else that the rebirth? So for people that are, I want to talk partnering as well, because people that are here are often smaller businesses. Our sense in my relation with you guys, with bringing in partners to help you with create service and so on, you guys are key. Like you could say it's obvious, but partnering isn't obvious. A lot of businesses want to do everything themselves to their detriment. Maybe just let's touch on partnering and what it means to small guys, big guys. I mean, just from both of you, you know, partnering seems to be a key philosophy in your business, and as it is for, I believe, most businesses. But what is it for you guys in partnering?
It's just at the core of our ethos and at the core of why Mark and I started to build Open. Remember, it was called Open Collaborative City Workspaces. So creating spaces to collaborate was a key driver. If we do that, then we must apply to ourselves. We cannot say, well, we create for you guys to collaborate, but we know everything best.
Yeah.
So it's from that start, we need to mirror what we do for our members. Otherwise, it becomes fake. You need to live what you preach. You need to live what you do.
Yeah.
So collaboration is the start. And there's different formats. So we had quite a few network organization, or sometimes they call it ecosystem players, where we give them space. We had to hook up dinner in Mabuneng at the very early days, at 250 people in our space on a Friday evening networking. and pitching, and we had funders there, everything. The other way of partnering is, I mentioned GrowthPoint and the V&A. So those are partners. We could have never done it without the V&A. So sometimes as an entrepreneur, you need a bit of a break. And when the invitation of David Green came, it was like, Mark bumped his head in a beam. still hurts.
Still got it.
But we gave it everything, because if you have that opportunity to come to that location, which is so prime, you give everything and you make it the best you can do. And from there, when GrowthPoint asked us to come and we sat at the table with Norbert and Etienne. So Norbert is the CEO of GrowthPoint. So the two guys sitting, we had a turnover that's, you can mention it, but it's irrelevant for GrowthPoint. Sitting with the CEO of GrowthPoint at the table, we've learned a lot in that journey. It's obviously a listed company. So rigor in terms of corporate governance, it was actually way beyond what we needed. It became a problem, but it was also a great, great learning experience to set up a company with the rigor of proper governance, traceability, transparency, reporting structures, all of that. There was a downside to GrowthPoint because we were scaling up, especially after COVID, scaling up. While GrowthPoint is this big asset management company. They manage exits. They don't grow quickly. They need to manage the investment.
Mm.
And our size was actually way too small to even feature in their numbers. Even if we would hit the ceiling and go across the ceiling with our revenue, it would be somewhere behind the comma for GrowthPoint.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there was a great match for us to learn and to get money, but there was a mismatch in terms of speed of decision-making and growth. And after COVID, we bought our shares back from GrowthPoint, and they're still invested, but as a preference shareholder. Don't go into the tech, but they're still a partner, but in a different position. Also their choice, they said, guys, you must run it. We love what you do. We're still in a few of their buildings, but it's a better. So configuring the right relationship is really, really key.
And Mark, you haven't got one model, because I see here Nola makes the best coffee in Hyde Park. But, you know, you bring in food from all over the place. And Klansky's is your president of choice in some. So
there's a bit of,
you've got different models for different sites, right?
From an F&B point of view, certainly. But maybe just to touch on partnering, again, if you don't mind. People working together is a very important step. Having spent some time in Silicon Valley, lots of people work together there. And South Africa has this idea that we've got to do it on our own. And there's a lot to be said for people to cluster. You know, I always in wonder, by no means a Trump, Trump supporter or a Musk supporter, but when you see that rocket going into the sky and you see 1,000 PhD engineers clapping, that is partnership. Yeah. That is collaboration. Yes, at a staff level, a team level, but certainly the same thing applies in how to stimulate and grow businesses. Is you need businesses to work together, and big business needs small business, and small businesses need big business, and hopefully, what Workshop 17 is actually providing. That canvas, that platform for those partners to emerge, because you can land up being right next to Werner Vogels.
Yeah.
How crazy is that?
Yeah.
So I think partnering is innate and embedded in what we do and what we believe in. So food and beverage. You know, certainly we want to give different food and beverage operators a choice. You know, you don't want to have a bagel in every store.
Yeah.
You know, in every location, you want to give some variety. But yeah, it's made us find a way into areas that we don't have a huge amount of expertise. And it's always learning. I mean, it's another part of terms of innovation.
Yeah.
You're continuously learning and innovating how to deliver, you know, the right product.
And your membership base, I mean, we didn't touch on this in our meetings, but, you know, we've got some members here, some new guests.
Yeah.
And you made the point to me about the space where a bank puts out this big showy stuff, clearly very expensive. Google isn't what you guys wanted to create. What do you feel the space is as a promise to customers, to workers, to that come in and see it? You know, what is the offer to your members?
Yeah, great. Thanks for that. I think that's really where our passion lies. Yes, we want to create beautiful spaces, but it's not about the design. It's about how you feel when you come in to a space. Do you feel welcome? Like, that's the first thing. And that's where our teams play a big role. And that's why I said we're in hospitality. If you go to a company, an office building, you meet a security person who doesn't say, so great that you're here. They said, can I see your ID? Can you sign here? Let me check if you're allowed in. That's very different than I think our teams do. Great to see you. Welcome. What can we do for you?
Yeah.
So we've lost that human touch in many companies. Yeah. So it's about, and you come into Workshop 17 and you speak about the banks. So if a big bank building is usually big. What do you feel when you walk in?
Small.
You feel small. That's not what we want. We don't create big atriums. We create a coffee bar and a friendly face.
Yeah.
And a cafe kind of setting where you feel I can land immediately instead of I need to go through security and feel grateful to be part of it. You mentioned Google. Can I guess? When I started and we started together, Google was like the benchmark. And I wondered why. Yes, it looks cool, but what does it do? It shouts Google everywhere. All the Google colors are everywhere. Google branding is on top of everything. So you feel like I'm under Google when I come in there. When you come to a Workshop 17 space, we feel we're the background and the members are the foreground. You don't walk into Workshop 17 shouting. You don't walk into shouting colors. It's warm colors. It's homely to create comfort. But you all are the foreground. You are the core of what we do. It's not about Workshop 17. It's about you. And that brings me to the member base. And Mark touched on it. We never wanted to be a startup space. But we wanted to be a space where startups can come into and can afford, where corporates feel at home. That's why we do eventing. If they don't need an office, we want them to come in to have meetings here or strategy sessions here, where small business and big business come into one place and no one feels better than the other.
Yeah.
So that, and that comes back to the learning that I started. Most of the learning that we do in life is not happening in courses or in programs. It happens while we work, while we engage with others. And it usually doesn't happen on a planned way. It happens by accident. Because I met someone, I hope you walk in here tonight, and meet someone that you didn't meet before, and you had a conversation that sparked something. That is the magic that we want to create. I want to create a platform for every day, but that you create together. We have 7,000 members at the moment. So my feeling is if you need something, an answer, a door to open, a connection, or just a nice conversation, there should be at least one, if not 100 of those 7,000 that can give you that. And we're still figuring out how to support that. And maybe the last element for the monologue. I think we've almost unlearned how to speak to each other. It's like there's a threshold to just say hi and say then, the follow-up. What we do is we say hi, and I still find people in Workshop 17 that have sat across each other in the same space for a month or more and don't know what the other person's doing.
Yeah.
And with the social media and the phones, we're very easy to send a WhatsApp.
Yeah.
What are you doing? How are you today?
Yeah.
Tell me a bit. Can we have a coffee together?
Yeah.
That is where magic starts. And it's not more difficult than that, but it's still not easy.
Google or any of these other large enterprises that have big R&D facilities actually can't compete with us because of one key thing, and that's diversity. Paul made the point. At Google, you're only going to meet Google. Here, even if we were sitting under a tree, it'll be more diversified and more greater ideas and could come to be. And Google, case in point, failed on the AI journey. Why? Because they became too obsessed with themselves. So the seven grandfathers of AI, six of them have left. So Google actually lost out because they weren't considering diversity and they were too consumed with with their identity. So I think shared spaces actually moderate that.
I mean, I've been fascinated by the places where you have cafes because there's a locked door. So you could say members have to tag in or you'll be greeted. But at places like Kloof Street, you can show up at Kleinski's and have a coffee. And Newlands, you can show up and have a coffee. I've often thought, well, who's tracking? Hyde Park, you can go. I mean, Rosebank, you can go. And I mean, does it ever worry you that you have people arriving and staying without, where does that live in your, because it's very open. Like, come for a coffee, stay. Are you a member? Aren't you a member? you are almost providing open spaces in some of the environments.
Yeah, look, that's kind of what you figure out along the way, because if you were to think logically, crikey, you might have put turnstiles and security and, I don't know, magnetic readers and so forth. But in fact, touch wood, you know, Mabaneng, with all its problems, I don't think we had anything of any substance stolen there.
Yeah.
It's like the most mind-blowing thing. Similar to Santon, very, very few incidents. Yeah.
And you have a host model, right? I mean, you have a host that knows people. So at some point, they're going to know pretty much who's a member, who's here. And that's a strong part of
maybe
it.
Maybe that's, I think, where South Africa, for me, misses a big point, that security is a social element. It's not about gates. It's about people. So if you know your members, you know when someone comes in that's, and you walk through, can I help you?
Yeah.
Welcome. So there's that element, and what Mark and I try to create in a country like this is to create a place of trust where you trust each other, where it's not about, can I protect my idea, but can I share my idea because someone else might add to it, and it becomes more. And to Mark's point, we had to fight with GrowthPoint to get the gate to walk into the space. But in 8 years, I think we had 3 times a laptop stolen, Michelle, about that, because security falls asleep. But Nodo does it looking at the next client to make a coffee for.
Yeah.
It's a very, so if you look at our...
There's no security in this space, right?
Watch if you look at the bank, if you go to Rose Bank, the parking was a big issue. You can valet park. Yeah. The valet parkers pay attention to everyone who comes because they're looking to see if they can help someone park.
Yeah.
So it is a different way. Create a service instead of security.
Yeah.
And it's made of people. And if people watch out and look out for each other, it becomes a safer space.
Great. We're going to do some questions just now, but I want us to wrap up with the current phase. You've reinvented yourself. You've opened lots of sites. Hyde Park opened this year. You've opened up Belito. I know Penny spent a whole month down there getting together. I don't know if it's on the beach or not. You're opening up in Musenberg, which is a big project. You've opened Century City. You seem to be on a tear. So what's behind this massive sort of go, and it's great because a lot of people might be less optimistic about opening up spaces. I mean, I've had clients or guests in here and say, geez, are they going to fill this space? What are they going to do? 5 stories, how are they going to fill it? So, you know, what gives you guys that feeling that you can open up all the space so aggressively?
Yeah, sometimes you wish you don't. So it's part of it. It's the excitement and it's frightening, and not everything works. So Belito, I'll be honest, we're struggling to fill it. Here, we still have space available. So not everything works. In Century City, we're opening with more than 80% occupied on the first day. And as an entrepreneur, in hindsight, you can create the logic. But if you look at Rosebank, we have 2 locations about 300 meters from each other.
Yeah. Yeah.
The landlords were very concerned that we would cannibalize.
Yeah.
But both do greatly.
Yeah.
Logic doesn't always apply. So sometimes you must trust your gut, go for it, get into a problem, solve it. But sometimes you get not everything works and not everything wins.
I love that because myself and Catherine in a business, I was in a business, and people just drive by. You can't drive a business by a spreadsheet, right? It doesn't show you all the answers. You have to do some kind of crazy stuff.
Yeah.
Mark, what's your sort of reason to drive this thing so aggressively?
Well,
it's not a spreadsheet, obviously.
I was actually quite happy to just end in Mabaneng.
Are you being pulled along on the journey?
Paul brings ambition. But yes, I think there's a job to be done. You know, and I don't know if I mentioned, but inequality is a big driving force for me, and I think for a lot of us. And climate change. We are facing existential crises in the world. I mean, I think it's fair to say. And I do genuinely believe that spaces like this can make a contribution. In fact, they're the only place to make a contribution. Whether, you know, because you leave school, which was a wonderful collaborative environment, you go to varsity, also collaborative, then your collaboration and your idealism falls flat and you land up working for Unilever and bringing out a new deodorant can. Hopefully places like this can actually bring people back to what's important and to face the crises that we face it.
Yeah.
And I believe that people in community actually make themselves the best version of themselves. They might not become brilliant, but they'll be at least the best version because they get moderated.
Yeah.
They moderate each other,
yeah.
You know, through the collective, through the common, through the green.
Yeah.
So it's now actually a priority to build these places because I do believe that the classical workplace is a crime scene. People get, you know, it's politicized. They lose their ideals, their values.
Yeah.
And a lot of businesses, frankly, shouldn't almost exist. I mean, they're not having a net positive benefit to the world.
Yeah.
And hopefully in places like this, that can be rationalized.
Yeah.
So, you know, let's grow from, and, you know, I'll put the challenge down, being the non-exec now in the business. Let's move from 30,000 to 300,000 squares.
Wow.
And from 300,000 to 3 million squares.
Yeah, just take it off recording. I mean, again, I'm going to use Catherine again because, you know, we were in a workspace, the office building around the corner, beautiful big building, high rise. When you walked in the first place, it looked beautiful. Then when you tried to work in it, it actually wasn't easy to work in it. And I arrived in January.
Might as well go home.
In a crisis. Exactly. Might as well go home. And Catherine would go home because she said, I'd rather work at home. And I found myself in January in a crisis with no client to go work at their office. So I came here and I found a place where I can work and have calm and peace. And I would rather be here than at home, you know. So I think you guys have done something really special here. I know for me and my network and having a million coffees here has been amazing. So, you know, we'd love to hear from more of the attendees and questions. Is there anything else you'd like to wrap up with just from your guys' side? I mean, I don't want to close it down. We're going to have a good session and take, I know we have good questions, but is there anything we haven't touched on that's really part of the story, you know, for the Spotify listeners out there?
Look, I think, yeah, let's get some questions. But Mark and I have been on a journey that we never imagined to be on. A Dutch guy and a tech guy who's happy with one location. And then you fall into, and to think that you can plan your future, I think is, you have to be alert. You have to have, I think, where Mark and I align is vision and what we're trying to achieve and values.
Yeah.
And then you keep on touch of what happened and you make your choice and you learn and you make a mistake and you learn and you go. And we would have never imagined that we would have 15 locations that we have now with a partnership with Cofisi opening another 15. So that's about 30 locations in 7 countries. For me, it's not about the numbers and the square meters, but I think about how many people are in there.
Mm, mm.
And if you speak about impact, that's 15,000 people that hopefully have a great place to work.
Yeah.
But even more, and that's again small, have at least one inspiring meeting a day that feels like it was worth coming in to the office today because I met this person or I heard this.
Yeah.
Or just this lift me up. Someone had a great success, I'm struggling, and I can see it's possible. It's the small things that give me the most pleasure. Yeah.
Wonderful. Mark, anything? I mean, Cofisi's international expansion is
it? Pan-African.
Pan-African, you're right.
Yeah. No, I think that obviously continues the vision of joining the dots. You know, Africa, as we well know from a colonial past, is very segregated and it was always about exploitation. And to imagine creating this kind of atmosphere across Africa, I think we've got a huge, huge opportunity, and I think we're sitting, you know, right at the beginning of it to have our members, you know, populate and cross-pollinate, you know, across countries. Because invariably South Africans think we need to go to London, we need to go to New York.
Yeah.
Why are we going to Kinshasa? Why aren't we going to Nairobi?
And I love that. I mean, we all rushed off to Europe, but actually Africa's on our doorstep, right?
But I mean, maybe the point, just to resonate with what Paul's saying, purpose, and passion and values certainly is what's kept me going, you know, because entrepreneurship, you've all heard it, is lonely, it's difficult. But if you've got a purpose and a value and you're enjoying what you're doing intrinsically, you know, you just keep on going. And, you know, it's success for me largely has been one foot and step in front of the next, you know, so.
Great.
Thank you, Craig. Well done.